Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Talking some Titans, and to help us do that, we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. Gentry, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Good morning to y'all.
Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So the Titans have moved on from Roger McCreary. Hey, look, I'm not gonna act like Roger McCreary is Deion Sanders out there or anything, but it does create another hole on the roster, on a roster that, as you know, Gentry, already got a whole lot of holes there. So what do you make of where the roster currently stands for the Titans and how long-term of a project this appears to be for Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi, who are in an organization where people just don't get a whole lot of time to do things in this organization?
No, and then you look back and, you know, Roger McCreary was a pretty good player for the Titans. I mean, he did okay for a few years. But was he good enough to justify the 35th overall pick in the 22 draft? Probably not. You just traded a second-round pick for a fifth, sixth pick swap. And that sort of thing has been happening a lot, where a few years after the fact, you're not getting value for what you had originally. And I think that's kind of why this roster is where it is. You look back at the draft decisions of 20, 21, 22, and they haven't panned out very well. So, yes, a big rebuilding project. I don't think losing Roger McCreary is really going to move the needle that much, because the needle was already pretty much in a place that, this is a hopeless situation for the Titans. And you hate to say it that way, because there's so many games to go, but where there was anger about this team's performance, I think we're now getting pretty heavy into apathy.
Yeah, I guess, my thing with this, Gentry, is just without knowing, what McCreary wanted to do or what was asking for or whatever, it's just like even not long ago, you looked at corner as, okay, at least that's a spot where they got some young guys. Maybe that's not going to be a spot they have to deal with. They have so much else to deal with between free agency and the draft. Okay, you can set that one aside. Well, now, especially because I don't know what you think, but I don't think Snead will be here next year, and I wouldn't be surprised if we never see him take another snap. Like, you have to completely start over at that position too, right? I mean, I guess it's just when you add it all together – Brownlee and McCreary together bothers me, I mean, they McCreary on its own, not necessarily, but those two together, now you have another entire position group that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, that's fair. And if you guys saw who made the play to win the game for the Jets at the end of the game
yep.
on Sunday.
Yep.
Yeah, and although I guess you could say he's still helping the Titans, because now that first pick starts coming into view again, but no, I mean, you look at this roster and it's like, okay, it's easier to just say what positions do you feel good about. I mean, okay, you're not going to probably draft a quarterback, maybe tackle a couple of the O-line spots, but no, I mean, they need everything, and they've needed everything. I think this latest draft class is proving to be helpful. If there is any silver lining to all this, the young receivers look pretty good. DK's playing well. I think Gunnar Helm's a good player. There are some – I think Kevin Winston, when he is out there defensively, you're going to see him play well at safety. So there are some younger guys, and I think this latest draft class is maybe some reason for optimism. But, yeah, they need everything. And it's that's been the worst part of this. Yes, the Titans are a rebuilding team, and they have been for a couple of years. The worst part of this is – it's really hard to look at this and see reasons for hope beyond maybe Cam Ward continuing to improve and play better as the season goes along. There really isn't another thing you look at with the Titans and say, I'm really excited about where it's headed with this.
So to that point, Gentry, there's, as you mentioned, a laundry list of needs that the team has, and there's more important positions that they need than what I'm about to ask you about. But how important do you think running back is moving forward? Pollard looks just way slower, way less explosive to me than he did a year ago. Spears, we'll see if he can, stay healthy the rest of the year, all those things. But to me, on that list of needs, running back has got to be on there somewhere, because I just feel like they need a little bit more explosiveness from that position that right now they don't have.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you guys made a good point on Jeremiah Love. I think you don't take the guy that high, but you're talking about a football player that's going to go in and help somebody. And it does matter that you have a running back. It's one of those positions in the league, a little bit like a middle linebacker who gets 150 tackles. You know, it's like those guys are so undervalued in today's NFL, and yet it matters. And running back is certainly one of those positions, as evidenced by the Titans getting Derrick Henry, who's going to go down as one of the best players in franchise history, in the second round. So I do feel like running back's a big spot. I think Tajay Spears, I would like to see more of him the rest of the way, as you say, if he does stay healthy, because I do think he's passed Tony Pollard a little bit. I think he's probably the Titans' best back right now. Certainly the guy you would rather have the football in space. There seems to be, I don't know if Pollard's taking a step back of what it is this season, but the explosiveness just hasn't been there. And I do think they might have something there with Spears. We still don't really know with Tajay. He hasn't stayed healthy long enough to really be out there to where I think the Titans necessarily know what they have yet in him. But I think this the best thing, and Joe made the point, the best thing for Cam Ward would be to have a good run game. And the Titans, in addition to everything else they've been lacking this year, they've not been able to run the ball as well this year as they did a year before.
I don't think we've hit you up on this, so, I mean, I know I'm putting you on the spot here. If we have, then I really have issues with my memory, and it's getting alarming. But
okay, now I'm curious.
Give me your quick top three for the next Titans coach.
Next top three for the next Titans coach. I would start with Arthur Smith. That one makes the most sense to me. I feel like Arthur would be familiar with the situation here. I think he would, you're talking about a guy who knows the team, would want to be in the city, and has been a head coach before, and I thought did a little bit better job in Atlanta than maybe some people thought. Along those same lines, I think Nagy's on the list too, as a guy who probably get a little bit better job as a head coach than gets credit for. And, you know, the third one, can we rule out Mike McCoy now?
Yes. Yes, we can, please.
Yeah, because, I mean, there was some thought about that the first couple of weeks, especially, and I've always, if Cam Ward had really responded well to him and started playing wonderfully as soon as Mike McCoy stepped into that role, then I think you would have a strong case for continuity's sake to say, all right, we let him ride this out until we're a better team. But, man, how you going to punt on 4th-and-3 on the Colts side of the field in a game that you've got no chance to win anyway, and you actually are holding on? There's a glimmer of hope, and you can't bring yourself to go for it. Come on, man. I think so. I think that we can probably write him off the list and look for someone else at number three, I guess. I think on that.
There we go. I like that. Let's switch gears to college football. On the Vanderbilt front, they get the win against Missouri. They got Texas coming up on Saturday with the status of Arch Manning unknown at this point, so we'll see what happens on that front. But what did you make of Vanderbilt not having their fastball offensively but still grinding one out against Missouri and the path that's now in front of them to make the college football playoff?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I was there Saturday. We missed you there, Joe, by the way, in the Vandy press box.
Yeah, I had to go watch a terrible Big Ten game.
So I think I made some Vanderbilt fans mad, actually, after that game, because I kind of wrote that it was an underwhelming performance and they were fortunate to win, which I think is true. I mean, Vanderbilt got beat in a lot of the areas that they want to win a game. The things they do well, they didn't really do well in this game. Missouri kind of controlled the lines of scrimmage. To me, that was a little bit alarming for a team in Vanderbilt who did kind of wear down at the end of last season. So you don't know, is that concerning or what? So I write that, and I think people took that as me kind of raining on the parade with game day and everything they had going on. Nothing to say. I mean, like, it's obviously quite a moment for Vanderbilt football right now. But on the field, they were kind of fortunate to win that game Saturday. So I am curious to see what that means for the last month of the season. This is a team that plays a very physical brand of football, and I think it Ward down over the course of last season because of it. Now, a big part of that was Pavia getting injured last year. They're a good bit healthier now, which is encouraging. But if you watch that game against Missouri, Missouri was able to keep Vanderbilt from doing a lot of what they want to do, especially offensively. They were a lot of three and outs. You know, they were able to kind of win the game up front. And that had not been happening to Vanderbilt. Yeah, that said, you're sitting here 7-1 going to Texas. You win that game, you come home, and all you got to do is handle Auburn and Kentucky. But I will say, Vanderbilt is going to have to play better the last month of the season than they played against Missouri. They did get a little fortunate, and they made some plays to win that game. That's what you got to do. You got to win an ugly game, and I understand all that. But there were a couple of alarming things to that game.
No, I think that's fair. I also think Missouri's good. You know, I think that Missouri's got dudes on D, and you saw it. But the depth thing is definitely a big. I think that's as college football moves forward with this, what we have. I mean, the teams that have depth are. I think that's going to be a big storyline because of how many games you have to play after this point to try once you get in that tournament. You know, and you know, does Vandy have enough of that? Right now, this week, Gentry, you've got Texas, which I think might be dead right now had they not had this incredible turnaround. They've obviously been, I don't know, are they the most disappointing team? I mean, I guess Penn State would be. I mean, they're the preseason number one, but at least they're still alive. Penn State's got to be the most disappointing, but still highly disappointing. Sure. Like, what do you think we're going to see here? I still think Texas has talent all over the field. We don't know about Arch. But like you said, I mean, if Vanderbilt wins this game, it is in position to not even need the win at Tennessee at the end, potentially.
I mean, it's crazy. I wouldn't overlook everyone now. They're just kind of assuming wins over Auburn and Kentucky. Auburn in particular, I wouldn't put that in the win column just
Agree.
Yet for sure. That's
Agree.
Another pretty good defense. It could be similar to that Missouri game. But who's to say Vanderbilt can't go win this game in Austin? I don't think we ever would have thought going into the season that it would set up to where, well, maybe Vandy should win this game. You know, I mean, that's kind of what it looks like right now. But I think with Vanderbilt, and it kind of goes back to the point of this weekend, my view on them has stopped. I've finally been able to stop looking at this and go, gosh, can you believe it's Vanderbilt? Can you believe they're doing all this? And start looking at this, as you said, Joe, what can they really do with this? Because now you're not really thinking anymore about like, oh God, can they win this many games or can they get in the playoff? Now it's like, okay, what can they do if they actually do get in the playoff? And I think the standards probably have changed. They've earned that going the last month of the season. They're in a wonderful position, a position that I'm not sure that program has ever been in before. But it's like, what do you do with it now? Because the games are only going to get more important as we go here. It's like you guys have said, it's like every week it's like the most important game in program history, and that's going to keep happening.
Well, Gentry, it's been fun to watch. Thank God we have some good football in this city to watch. We will talk to you soon, my friend, and thanks for being with us this morning.
You bet. Take care, guys.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessee and our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll react to what Gentry had to say. Plus, it is an ever-changing landscape for the coaches right now in college football. What does that mean for one local coach around here? We will get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. MTSU taking on Jacksonville State tomorrow at 6:30. You can catch all the action on Totally Hits 93.3 with coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at TotallyHitsNashville.com. Appreciate Gentry Estes from the Tennessee and for being with us in the last segment. Joe, as we know, it's a busy time in college football, not only from the games and the college football playoff discussion heating up and the calendars flipping in November, but also coaches are getting fired all over the place. You've got Billy Napier in the SEC already been fired. You got Brian Kelly that was just fired this past weekend. James Franklin fired by Penn State. And who knows what else is coming on the coach firing front as the season continues here. Adam Sparks did an interesting piece yesterday at the Knoxville News Sentinel, kind of roping all that discussion into the Josh Heupel part of this. And basically, you know, his point was, you know, Heupel is dealing with a lot of problems right now that winning coaches deal with. Like, people are mad at his coordinators and people are mad at some play calling every now and then. But, you know, his point was, you know, Brian Kelly could never find a way to get LSU to the playoff. Heupel has done that with Tennessee. Billy Napier couldn't get the offense going in Florida. Obviously, Heupel has done that at Tennessee. Sam Pittman couldn't get his team to improve at Arkansas. Heupel has gotten better throughout his time there. So, like, all the hallmarks that you're kind of looking for with a coach and a program, Heupel has done to this point. So, you know, very big game for him coming up this weekend. It's basically a playoff game on Saturday at Neyland Stadium against Oklahoma. And we'll see how that goes for Tennessee. I think there has been a very loud minority from the Tennessee fan base on social media that's really mad at Josh Heupel in the aftermath of the Alabama game. And it's starting to look at, like, is he the guy? Like, is he the guy that is going to carry them forward and compete for national championships? Do they need to go ahead and cut bait and move on from him? I don't think that conversation is very loud right now. I do think that conversation is pretty loud on his defensive coordinator at the moment. We'll see what that looks like at the end of the season here. But how do you kind of view the landscape in the SEC, all these coaches getting fired, where Josh Heupel fits into that right now at Tennessee, and how cold his seat currently either is or should be in your mind?
Yeah, I think it's a very good point by Sparks when you compare him to some of these flameouts all around him. I mean, the Brian Kelly thing, you know, obviously is the big one this week, but it's a big one. I mean, just the size of the buyout, the absolute. That was an earth shaker when they went and got him from Notre Dame, and it was all about, oh, this is a place where I can win a national title, and LSU is like, oh, we got ourselves a and it just was bad. And it, just quickly on Kelly, I mean, if you go around on social media right now, I feel like every former player who hates his guts is like sending out a tweet about why they hate his guts.
It's has anyone crazy. Ever liked him?
I mean, I think there's
somebody has to.
Yeah, right? I think there's players who played for him or who respect him and had decent relationships with him. But, you know, the thing is, a lot of what Brian Kelly is as a coach is a little bit older school, but he's never been approachable by players. He's always been a jerk on the sidelines screaming at coaches and players. It's not that different from Nick Saban. It's just that Saban won national titles. And I think he also did some things in those ways better. But when you look at Heupel, first of all, it's funny because I'm working on this thing trying to figure out who should get all these jobs and who might be available. And I listed a bunch of Power Four head coaches who might be enticed to change jobs, such as Lane Kiffin, such as Kenny Dillingham, and Clark Lee is certainly on the list. He's going to be. I mean, Clark Lee's already being mentioned in LSU jobs. He's going to be mentioned with a bunch of jobs. I did not put Heupel on there because if Oklahoma does open, then okay, then I think maybe you have. But, like, Heupel's not really moving up, you know. So I think on his side of it, I don't see anything. On the hot seat, I mean, I think his seat should be cool as a cucumber right now. Now, look.
And by the way, I think it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. Like, this is where sometimes you look at a fan base, and it's like that they do kind of dictate, and it's like, hey, these fans are out on this guy. I was just up at Michigan State; they're out. They hit nobody. Magic Johnson sent out a tweet last night, like, I'm very disappointed in my football team. It's like, that's the nastiest tweet Magic Johnson has ever sent. Usually, it's just like, I like sports and popcorn. I mean, they're out. Tennessee fans, there's a small percentage of these people who are like, fire everybody every freaking game, right?
Yeah.
What percentage of Tennessee fans, like, actually want to move on from Heupel? I'd say it's about 4%.
Yeah, it's very small.
So, but I will say, too, it was discouraging on the road. Like, at some point with Heupel, you do get to, like, okay, is it time to take the next step? Can this guy not get us to the next step? This is a huge game for him because this team has raised the expectations.
Yes.
I think this team should be in the playoff. It's just, it's at this point, it's hard to not look at the defense and say they are missing something they shouldn't be missing. They have too much talent to be that bad, but they're pretty bad.
Defense is bad. And we'll see if they, win the game against Oklahoma, They got to go to Florida, which I know Tennessee fans are freaking out about. You got Vanderbilt at the end of the year. So, I mean, look, they could lose three more games. We'll see what happens on that front. You know, Keith points out no one should be mad at Heupel. Let's not forget where we were before Heupel got there. Life is good. And that's largely where I stand. Like, Heupel has done a very good job at Tennessee.
Yeah.
A very good job.
No doubt.
At Tennessee. Now, is Josh Heupel going to be the coach that gets them to the point where they are competing for a national championship? And I don't, you know, making the 12-team playoff and competing for a national championship to me are not the same things. And I think to a lot of people are not the same things. Are you like is he going to get you to the point where you're the elite of the elite? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. Like, he's got a good recruiting class coming in next year. I think there's limitations as to what that means in today's landscape of college football, because we talked about that forever with Nico, and then he bolted. He's got number one quarterback, depending on where you look, coming in next year. We'll see how that all ends up shaking out. So, like, to me, there's nothing going on right now with Heupel that makes me think he's anywhere close to being on the hot seat. I do think if you get 2-3 years down the road, and this is what it is, which is really good, but maybe not great, then I think you start to say, okay, how do you handle that? How do you view that if you're Danny White, if you're Tennessee at that point? I don't think we're anywhere close to it right now.
No. But, yeah, like it's like at some point, obviously we just saw it with James Franklin. He took a program that was, I mean, you know, a tough spot, although Bill O'Brien also, you know, did some good things in a very short period of time. And he got him to a certain point, and then all of a sudden it becomes this narrative of his record against, you know, top five, top ten, all that stuff. You know, a lot of it was just basically not being able to beat Ohio State. But, you know, with Heupel, he has a better record. He's won some of those big games, but there's also with him, it's like the road games, and, you know, so like at some point you need another step forward with him. And look, people are mad at Tim Banks, and I think that, you know, I think that starts to become a possible conversation. Tim Banks at DC. I mean, sometimes you have to make tough choices. I also think that Heupel, I think obviously this year they're back, but that offense wobbled when they lost Alex Golish, you know? And Alex Golish is going to, if he wants to, potentially get a Power 4 head coaching job now too. Coordinators are huge in this thing. I mean, look at like Coach O. He had two great coordinators, and he had talent all over the field, but still. Like, those coordinators were a huge part of them winning it all. So, I agree. At some point, you have that conversation. I don't think we're close to it yet.
615-737-1025, our phone number. A lot of your thoughts to get to on the Heupel front. We will do that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got the Rob rant coming up here in about 10 minutes. Bruce Feldman from The Athletic will be with us at 8:30. We've got a lot of things on the college football front to get into with him. Taking your thoughts on Josh Heupel and Tennessee as well. A lot of people very mad at Tim Banks. We've gotten a lot of responses about Tim Banks on the text line, which is not surprising. One texter says, Banks' defense relies on elite players, which they only have on the edge. They could stop the run with the front four last year, which made everything easier, along with the All-American corner. Got a hard time adjusting in game, and it cost the Georgia game. And almost in Mississippi State, there should be a conversation about him. Now, Heupel, to this point, been pretty loyal to his staff. I do wonder at the end of the year, like if the defense doesn't get better, and let's say they miss out on a college football playoff, does that become a conversation that he legitimately entertains, or is that just fan noise and not actual substance to it?
That's a good question. I think that's one of the hardest things about being I think especially a college football coach, but probably a big time football coach in you know, either college or the NFL, is that balance between, you know, your loyalty, your relationships, and just being able to make the hard choices and saying, we just gotta go get somebody. You know, somebody like Brian Kelly, that's a guy who never had any problem. Yeah, get out of here, dude. I'm bringing in somebody who's better. Like, and you know, look, Nick Saban he went through so many coordinators. For the most part, it was like they did well. They won big. They got jobs. He had to replace them. But he also made hard choices too his whole career. And so I think I think the offense is going great this year. I do think that there was an obvious step back at OC. And when Golish left, And also, yeah, I think it's fair to talk about Banks. I'm not saying he should be fired, but it's been a disappointing year. He also expected to have different people at corner. You know, there's some things that have gone on. The Boo Carter thing is not on Tim Banks. That's just it's a bad situation, and I think you saw it in the last game. Every time I see that play, it blows my mind. He had him tackled at the 10 if he wanted to.
Yeah.
He just slowed up.
Stop.
Let him go.
Yeah.
But it's fair. I mean, it's disappointing. I thought they'd be – and just imagine if they were close to – again, the corner thing is what it is. But, like, stopping the run and things like that and linebacker play, like, if they were – safety play. If they were close to what we thought they'd be, this team would be –
yeah,
well, pretty sick.
They'd be, yeah, like, think about, we've talked about this before, if you could put, like, the 2022 Tennessee offense and the 2024 Tennessee defense together, what would that team look like?
Yeah, look like a national champion.
So I guess that's my point, is there a year coming up here pretty soon where that's what it is, where you've got whatever the best version of your defense is and whatever the best version of your offense is together at the same time, because they've not really had that to this point. Like, last year, pretty darn good defense. Now, granted, in fairness, that defense got absolutely lit up against Ohio State, as did everybody else last year in the college football playoff. But pretty good defense and an offense that was just good enough to kind of get you there at that point, particularly with Samson running the ball. Like, this offense is way better than last year's Tennessee's offense. But the defense is significantly worse than it was last year. So is there a year coming up where those two things kind of come together at the same time? Because that's, you know, along with the recruiting that he's doing, that's how you get into the conversation of actually being a threat to go win a championship.
Yeah. And I know that, like you've said, I have to have the same thought. Like, just not going to see Jermod McCoy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we just talked to Eric Kane, and I don't know, like, there's still this feeling that he wants to play. I still would, like, if I was his agent, and it's like, yes, he's 100% healthy, it's stable, it's all good. I know you get this deep in the season, it's like, yeah, do we want to mess around with it? I still might make the case, like, you out and play some good football.
I agree.
You solidify yourself as a first-round pick, or you help yourself in the draft.
I don't know that I have doubt that he wants to get back out there. I just, like, the fact that he's not been able to get on the field yet with the team is concerning to me. Like, yeah. What does that mean?
Yeah.
It's November.
Right. And Like, knowing nothing about it, I would probably assume they just said to bag it, but it doesn't sound like it. So, anyway, what if they do get him back, you know, for end of the year? And, again, these postseasons last forever. If you're going to be good,
yep,
could that defense still take a big step forward?
It'd be nice to see. They're going to need it on Saturday night. Real quick on the Clark Lee front, we've talked about it would probably take a pretty special circumstance and job to open up for him to give serious consideration to leaving Vanderbilt. Is the LSU job that job?
I know
if they come calling his way, would that be one of those things?
I know that Steve Wiltfong, 24/7 Sports, long time, their top, you know, recruiting guy, made a sort of impassioned case yesterday for why Clark Lee is who they should basically target. Yeah, look, if I'm Clark Lee and LSU comes at me, is all in, first of all, you have to have the conversations. You have to listen to them, and you have to consider. The LSU job, as some people have made clear, and this is why, to me, Lane Kiffin, if I'm Lane Kiffin, I prefer LSU or Florida. Even though Florida, we know, you know, Florida has the potential. They've won national championships. It's a talent-rich state. LSU is the rare situation, as people have pointed out here recently in the wake of Brian Kelly, where, like, the top talent in that state goes to LSU. You know? It doesn't matter what the coach. The coach is less important. And, of course, you have to – all the things. You have to be competitive financially and all that stuff. And you will be. There's something about that that's kind of – there's a little bit of more stability with that in place, not to mention – arguably the best environment at home to win games. Like, there's other things that you look at as a coach to win. And, again, I'm sorry, but the fact that Coach O won a natty there, the fact that Les Miles won a natty there, also, you know, should tell you something. I mean, I think that Clark Lee would have to take a serious look at that. Do I think he would leave Vanderbilt for LSU? I guess right now I would probably guess no. But if you're a Vanderbilt fan who's like, ah, he's not, he's home and he's his alma mater. People leave their alma mater sometimes. Kenny Dillingham's at Arizona. That's his alma mater. I'm not signing up for the idea that he's definitely there for life. Sometimes, like, you just get an amazing opportunity. LSU would be the one that at least you'd have to really listen, right?
If I'm Clark Lee, I'm listening to that way more than I'm listening to, like, Penn State, for instance. That's just me. You know, I think it's going to take for Clark Lee, being a Nashville guy, doing what he's doing at Vanderbilt right now, to leave that, I think it's going to take something pretty special. LSU would be in that category to me. Like, it'd be hard for me to turn that down if I was him. Now, I'm not saying he won't turn it down. I'm not saying that he's going to be their first call. Like, may go hire somebody without ever speaking to Clark Lee.
There's some people who really like Kelvin Shepard, the Lions D coordinator, who, of course, is an LSU legend.
Yeah. So, like, I don't even know how high up on LSU's list Clark Lee would be. I would have to assume it'd be somewhere on there at some point, but that would be one of those jobs where I would have to give it some serious thought if I was Clark Lee.
So, for as amazing as this is, Vanderbilt fans, all the things that come with winning and being in the conversation, being relevant, this is one of the things that also comes with it. People trying to get your coach.
Yep. 615-737-1025, our phone number. The Rob Rant coming up next. We'll have Bruce Feldman from The Athletic at 8:30. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is The Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
I'll siphon gasoline through, you know, your tailpipe.
Anybody want my pocket mints? Pocket mints. Going once. Going twice. Anybody want one?
The New Jersey version of Mr. Clean is here.
You're bald.
Oh, you must really love yourself.
Brian, did you know that when the receiver's elbow's down in bounds, that's a catch?
Wait, were bald at 8 years old?
That Lane Kiffin hiring his ancient father to be the defensive coordinator out there. Why can't he just go hire somebody normal?
Well, at least he didn't say he hated his father.
It is time for the Rob Rant, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Today, I want to focus on the fan base here in Nashville, and specifically with the Predators here, but really sports fans here in general in Nashville, because I would love for at one point here, the Titans, the Predators, whichever one, take your pick, for them to trade for somebody who is trade, sign, whatever, a potential future Hall of Famer that comes here and continues to play like a future Hall of Famer. And it just ain't happening, man. They've had Randy Moss roll through here with the Titans, and I don't even know how much he got on the field with Jeff Fisher in there. I mean, he's just hanging out on the sideline pretty much. And that didn't go very well for the Tennessee Titans. They had Andre Johnson here for a cup of coffee. He did catch a game-winning touchdown pass against the Detroit Lions from Marcus Mariota. So at least some level of contribution there before he just up and retired. So you've got that part of it going. I mean, Hopkins had one decent year here, right? One decent year. We know Julio. That didn't go well. That did not go well with the Tennessee Titans. It's like at some point, can you get one of these guys to come in here and play at the same level that they've been at all career, or at least close to it, the same level that they've been at their entire career? And, Joe, unfortunately, I think we're moving pretty rapidly towards the next story of that in this city, being Steven Stamkos. And that guy's future Hall of Famer. He's closing in on 600 goals, two-time Stanley Cup champion, and he's got 2 points in 10 games for the Predators. One goal, one assist. He's being outscored by Cole Smith right now for the Predators. That's how things are going for Steven Stamkos. And, you know, we talked about it at the time he signed his contract. You know, Tampa Bay obviously was not willing to go there with him. He's 35. He'll be 36 coming up in February. And look, it's not like Tampa Bay's off to a rocking start this year either, but they did basically choose Jake Guentzel over Steven Stamkos. And that has worked out very well for Tampa Bay in terms of the choice that they made there. Look, I like Steven Stamkos a whole lot. I've got as much respect for Steven Stamkos as probably any player I've ever been around when it comes to the NHL. Like, he's everything that you want in a hockey player. But it's pretty clearly going the other way on him. And I don't know. Like, he's going to play better, I think, than he's played so far this year to this point. Like, he'll probably go through a couple of stretches where he'll roll off, you know, 3-4 goals in a 5-game stretch or something like that. But the thing that concerns me the most, Joe, is you watch him out there, and it's just he's not dangerous at all. Like, it, you know, power play, maybe they'll get that figured out at some point this year. 5-on-5, he's just not dangerous at all. How much of that is him? How much of that is the people that he's playing with? It's probably some combination of the two. But the guy's got 2 points in 10 games. It hasn't looked good at all. And it just feels like, Joe, another one of those situations where you bring in a guy that's highly accomplished in this city, has done a lot of things, has a one-way ticket, first ballot Hall of Famer coming up, and they get here and just not much. Not much going on. That's what it's looking like we're headed with Steven Stamkos right now.
You know, the way this started, I did not anticipate this was going to turn into
the curve.
And Steven Stamkos.
Steven Stamkos.
let's rip him for a minute. It's a fair point. It's kind of depressing. I also think that we should take some heat because, boy, we had a little bit of fun at the expense of Tampa Bay's decision making that summer with a few things that they did. And turns out that they had an idea. They timed it well. I will ask this, and I know it's been extreme with the Titans. And one of my answers is that's why when you get a Hall of Fame level player, you keep them. AJ Brown.
Yeah.
But I'd wonder how many guys like that go to another place and then they maintain the. Now, obviously,
well, Preds have had one. Paul Kariya was that guy.
Yeah.
And he's Hall of Famer. And, you know, there's some different stuff going on with him. But he had some injuries. He ended up from Anaheim to Colorado. Lockout comes here. And he was awesome for 2 years.
Like, obviously, your Packers have a guy. But that's also an extreme and extremely stupid situation on the Dallas side. I mean, that's one you very rarely see is, like, absolute prime. Usually there's, you know, you're some level of on the downside.
Correct.
Right? It does seem like this city has had it especially bad in terms of, like, the outcomes. Like, again, like Julio's an example of a guy who I know some people want to try to act like they're smart and say they knew it all along, but, like, there were more reasons to believe than not that he still had a lot left.
Well, yes. Now, I agree with you. Some level of downside. Like, I had no doubt when they signed Stamkos. Like, the idea that he was just going to roll off 40 goals every year here, I just think – no, I don't think anybody expected that. I will say, though, like, the 3 years before he got here, he had 42 goals and 106 points in 21-22. He had 34 goals and 84 points in 22-23. And the year before he got here in Tampa, 40 goals, 81 points. That's pretty high-level play that he had. And then he gets here, and it just immediately goes the other way. Yeah.
And it is. It is not just him, of course. They were terrible last year. And right now, like, their power play – because he has to load up on the power play at this point. So he has to.
Well, and again, like, he loaded up a lot on the power play in Tampa, too. So it's fair to point that out. I mean, that power play in Tampa is outrageous.
Insane.
When it's got – you're talking about Kucherov and Hedman and
Point
and him. Like, that's a pretty outrageous power play. So, obviously, there's a huge difference going from that to what they've got here with the power play. Having said that, I mean, there have been multiple nights this year where you just don't notice him at all out there. And other people pointed this out, too, like – when they went through Canada last week, I think I can't remember who they were playing. Maybe the Jets, and some national Canadian punchers. Like, I have not noticed Steven Stamkos one time in this game, and that to me is probably more concerning than anything else. Like, the slow production to start, it's concerning, but sometimes that's explainable. Sometimes it's like, well, I mean, the guy's just incredibly unlucky in the year. He's just not doing much out there right now.
And you know the thing with guys in this league, obviously a lot of them can go. Can continue to, produce at a high level at an older age, but, like, you think about the mileage logged at that age in this league for a lot of these guys who get in the league when they're young. I mean, it's kind of amazing that some of them can produce as late as they can.
Yeah,
but there's some tread off the tires.
I will say this. There's one texture that says Stamkos is risking first ballot Hall of Fame the next 3 years if he continues to suck like this. There's no chance he's a first ballot after performing like he did last year. He's first ballot Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
No. He could not score a goal in any game he plays the rest of his career, and he's still a first ballot Hall of Fame.
Yeah. All the stuff that happened in Tampa Bay will continue to have happened.
Yes. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Some injury news that could affect the Vanderbilt Commodores this weekend. We will get into that coming up next. Bruce Feldman from The Athletic at 8:30. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.